Support for The Front Porch comes from WVCarFinder.com, matching West Virginia cars with West Virginians who want to buy them. It's a service of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. Find out more at WVCarFinder.com. And you're on The Front Porch. I'm Laurie Lynn, joined as usual by my friend Rick Wilson. Scott Finn is off again today.
Yeah, as I understand, he's undergoing survivalist training in the Everglades, and he's probably eating bugs and tadpoles as we speak.
That sounds preferable to enduring this never-ending election season. So, Rick, I think you and I both have a little bit of election fatigue, but we're told that our listeners just can't get enough. So here we are. It feels like this election season has gone on forever. We have about another week and a half. The third presidential debate was last week. You watched it, right? Or listened to it?
You couldn't have pried me away from it.
They all are kind of blending together in my mind. What stood out to you about the third one?
You know, it really is like watching a train go off the rails in slow motion, I think. I think we should tell them we've made a pact with each other that I will not call you such a nasty woman. And in return, what was your pledge?
I won't call you a bad hombre.
So we're setting a tone here, yeah. West Virginia, of elevated discourse.
Yeah, that nasty woman line, just he threw, so we're referring to Trump, but near the end of the debate, I think Hillary was talking and he just kind of threw in, randomly interjected, such a nasty woman. I mean, what are you thinking? First of all, what are you talking about? It was kind of his, I think, personality in a nutshell. And, you know, you could just kind of feel people across the country being turned off. Or I don't know, maybe I'm projecting. Maybe people loved it.
You know, I mean, I think the whole women having the vote memo might not have gotten through on time there. I don't know.
But, you know, I mean, it's interesting. So many people, I think, on the right, or pockets of the right, have been waiting for 20 years for somebody to just stick it to Hillary. You know, they can't stand her. And so if you're one of those people, and of course there are millions of mm-hmm. those people, then you're standing up and cheering. But those people were already Trump supporters.
Yeah, if you think of politics as trying to move the center your way, that's something that hadn't happened.
One thing that also I noticed was Hillary is not a good debater, honestly. She's very well prepared.
Right.
And she can seem, you know, fluid when she's prepared. But for example, the question about the Clinton Foundation, where she got a fairly tough question from Chris Wallace.
He did a good job, I think.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. And then she didn't answer it, tried to pivot immediately to all the great things that the foundation is doing, which, of course, no one disputes that it does good things. The question is whether there was, you know, an improper relationship between the foundation and the State Department when she was Secretary of State. But you just thought, well, gosh, if there were a competent Republican candidate, he could have just carved her up right there. Instead, she's facing Donald Trump, who, you know, wanders off into Putin. Putin's great because he once said nice things about me. How many times has he repeated that line? And then, you know, ends with what a nasty woman. Just the missed opportunity for Republicans was what kept sticking out to me.
Yeah, you really wonder how this happened. If you tend to think of certain people having a lock on the political process, this is something, a little bit of a vicarious joy. I'm used to seeing people who are sort of on the left end of things, doing things that are so silly and self-destructive, they're not getting paid by the other side, they're getting ripped off. So it is a kind of a pleasure sometimes to see it happen.
I'm sure.
Across the thing.
The elections here are state races. We've heard some complaints about how nasty, how personal some of them have gotten. I wanted to talk about this issue with the West Virginia Family Values Pact, which we've mentioned before on The Front Porch. The West Virginia Family Values Pact, despite what the name might indicate, is largely funded by unions and some trial lawyers supporting Democrat candidates for office. It's not so much the name that bothers me, although I think it's kind of shabby to give yourself that kind of name if you're trying to pretend that you're something you're not.
It is a little retro. I mean, I will say that, like in 1994.
Right. It's trying to harken back to that, you know, when Republicans were calling themselves, you know, pro-family values. No one really uses that phrase non-ironically, I think, anymore. But apparently, they are actually running ads saying, support conservative values, vote for, you know, X. And X is a Democrat. And they're not saying that X is a Democrat. They're saying conservative. This PAC also went after Mitch Carmichael in the primary. And I think we talked about that back in May. They did not defeat Carmichael. But now they're using Carmichael in this weird way against other people, but not saying it's Carmichael. Anyway, the whole upshot of it is that Chris Walters has filed a cease and desist letter. He's trying to get these ads taken off the air because he says they falsely imply that he testified in favor of a child molester. The person who testified in the child molester trial was Mitch Carmichael. And apparently these ads kind of try and shade it to make it sound as though Walters did it. I think they're doing the same thing against Senator Ferns. I think it says something like, their leader testified in favor of a child molester or on behalf of a child molester. I'm not going to ask you to defend it because I don't think you would, but what does it say about the left that it's cloaking itself as conservative? I mean, is that new? Is that especially depressing?
If you think back about campaign histories, I'm thinking about 2004 and For the Sake of the Kids, when people went after McGraw and they're, you know, portraying him as, you know, helping out this sex offender and stuff like that. And if you read the, I mean, it just sort of was real. You know, yeah. I'm not saying this is an ideal tone.
I know that history, and I agree with you that that was shady and weird. But this almost goes a step further in that it's dressing something up as something that it's not. I mean, but what this is doing is this is using phrases like family values and conservative, which suggests to people a certain kind of legislator, right? A certain set of things that this legislator might vote for. And when you say family values conservative, vote for this guy, you're telling people essentially without actually saying it, you know, this guy's going to vote for conservative stuff that a family values, probably religious conservative person would be in favor of. And the candidates that they are supporting with these ads are going to not really do those things. I mean, if we're really, I mean, again, we can kind of argue about what's family values, but I'm saying what is the average person going to think? They're going to think that that person would say support the religious freedom bill. These candidates would not do that. They would support the 20-week fetal pain bill. These candidates are not going to do that. And so why, and I know the answer to this, why can't they just say what they actually support? You know, why can't they be honest about what their set of candidates is actually for?
This might not be the level that you'd like to go, but I thought about this a lot since George W. Bush got in there, is that the term conservative nowadays often applies to something people seeking radical changes that, you know, so it kind of goes against the traditional meaning, like, let's be conservative with our resources, as in let's respect the past, let's not go crazy in pursuing changes, let's consider precedent, let's realize that things are really complicated and human nature is such that if you think you can wipe the slate clean, it's probably going to go bad. There needs to be another word besides conservatism to describe a wing of the movement on the Republican Party, which seems more radical.
Well, what would be actually clear is if you used words in these ads, for example, like Democrat and Republican. Neither side, what's so interesting to me about this election here is that you watch these ads and you don't see either side saying, yeah, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican. For example, my Senator Corey Palumbo, who's running in a pretty tough, it looks like, fight against a challenger, Chris Stansbury, he runs ads that say, Corey Palumbo, I'm an independent voice for West Virginia. Okay, what does that mean? He also says, we were talking about this earlier, vote for me because I'll do the right thing. Well, okay, that's awesome that you're not going to do the wrong thing, but it elides the entire question in politics is what is the right thing? That's the whole, you know, will you vote for the fetal pain bill? Will you vote for right to work? I think right to work was the right thing. You think it wasn't the right thing.
And I don't think it was conservative because it alters something that has been in place for years.
Well, yeah, but okay, so we're off the conservative issue. But what, again, I mean, I'll do the right thing literally tells me nothing about your policies. And I think in some ways that's the mark of a state that's in transition. People who still kind of identify as Democrats, but also aren't really still Democrats in the way that they vote or in the way that they think. So we have more registered Democrats than Republicans, right? So I think that's one reason why you don't see as much, you know, vote Democrat Corey Palumbo for office.
I mean, I think there are polls that say that no one's really crazy about the political parties these days. And in fact, I think the front porch political phrase of the season, I believe, is pulsating middle finger. You know, like Bernie Sanders is not your typical Joe Manchin Democrat. And did here, and then Trump is certainly not anyone's.
One more question, I think, before we wrap up. Do you think politics has become so awful, such a slog, so negative and personal, and the scrutiny has become so intense that you have to be kind of, there has to be something wrong with you to want that office, or, you know, like it kind of like, I wouldn't want to be a member of any club that would have me, you know, the famous quote. Do you think we're at that point?
You know, someone gave me a book to read this last year when we went on vacation called The Circle. And it was kind of like we live in a world like the Panopticon where everyone, everything ever says or does kind of sticks with them. And in that kind of political environment, you really wonder why people would want to do it if you ever have an offstage moment. But then, you know, they think about we're worse now than we ever were. But if you look back at, like, say, some of the stuff that Jefferson said about Adams and all this, absolutely. They got really nasty with each other. And no one's caned anybody in the Senate just yet. Like, Brooks caned Sumner, right?
Oh, right. Back, like, pre-Civil War, yeah. Was that kind of different? I mean, it was nasty and personal, but you were still able to have a private life.
That's the big thing.
The media and social media, and you know, you talk about FDR being in a wheelchair, and many Americans weren't even aware of that because the press was deferential. And I'm not suggesting that the press shouldn't cover things, but there were zones that were private and zones that were public. But now you don't have that.
That's true.
We had, going back to Marco Rubio, the New York Times ran this giant, what they apparently consider to be a earth-shaking expose on his wife's speeding tickets. Seems like this happened in another age, you know, where your wife's speeding tickets would be a big deal. Now we have Russian hackers and... you know, things I can't even say on the air from Trump. So, do you have a Bible verse this week, Rick?
This doesn't seem to be a very biblical season for me. I'm kind of under-inspired.
All right. Well, you have 2 weeks to prepare.
I will get one for the election.
I
think I'll have one for the election, depending on how it goes.
All right. You have two versions ready to go.
Pray for God to kill them and they won't be able to die from the book of Revelation.
And that's the front porch. Thanks, Rick, for being here. Scott, we'll see you next time.
If you make it.
We'll catch you guys after the election. Take care. So what I want to say to you is that you're a puppet.
No, you're a puppet.
You're a puppet.
No, you're a puppet.